Welcome back to The Wrong Opinion. Useless NBA trivia and garbage rankings. We are in the season two titled Best Who Never. This week we're talking about the best players who never won a finals MVP. So of course we're only grading players who have a ring. It doesn't matter when they got the ring, just that they have a ring. They could have got it at the end of their career. They could have been the best player on their team, but just didn't get the finals MVP. Anybody who has a ring and doesn't have a finals MVP is available. The majority of their career has to have come since 1969. Whether that means their prime was after 1969 or their title came after 1969, just kind of whatever I decide, honestly. So those like, you know, Bill Russell isn't making this list. He won one title, one of his 11 titles, and he didn't win finals MVP in that year. I don't think Oscar Robertson makes the list. I don't think he makes sense to be on this list. So just guys like that, okay? So this is a fairly modern list. And just looking at it, most of the guys are from the 80s and beyond. A lot of guys from today, just because this is a deeper league as we progress farther into history. Let's crack right into it. I want to start with the third team. We can normally start first team. We're starting third team, working our way up, just because I feel like it. Third team point guard, Gary Payton. One of the three or four best defensive point guards of all time. And three of those players make our first, second, third team point guard list, which is hilarious. Gary Payton, of course, led his team to a kind of unlikely finals appearance in 96. The West was a little bit weaker back then, but still incredibly impressive for a solid team. But then when he came to the Heat in 06, that's kind of when he finally realized, hey, I'm not the guy. I'm not the biggest fan of Gary Payton. I think he jacked up too many threes, especially in around the turn of the century. I don't like that his teammates were scared of him, but he didn't necessarily lead them the way guys like Jordan did. But when he came to the Heat, he was the seventh most important player on that team. He was the second string point guard, hit a couple big threes, knew where to give Dwayne Wade the ball where he liked it, fed Shaq, and a really important part of that title team. Would they have won without him? I don't know. That's a useless question to ask. Of course, he never won finals MVP. Third team shooting guard, I went with Manu Ginobili. I thought this kind of might have been high, but I'm just not seeing a guy who I would put above him. Maybe you go a guy from a modern dynasty, but I don't know. Manu, I think, is historically, I've said this before, he's an incredible player, really fun to watch. I think historically a little overrated. When you average 25 minutes a game, you wonder why you can't be on the court for more time. But stepped up in big moments, wasn't afraid to play in big moments, which was an important part of that Spurs team. Flashy at times, it seemed he was the opposite of the Spurs culture, but it worked. It was incredibly fun and fit into what the Spurs needed at that time. Third team small forward, Sean Marion. And it's funny because he was not the most important part of the title team he won. He was probably their best wing-ish defender. He's kind of a 3-4, best forward defender. But when he was at his peak, he was probably Hall of Famer. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame with the considering his time with the Suns. But they call him the Matrix for a reason. He can do kind of anything. He actually had a decent three-point shot, despite it looking hideous. Just percentage-wise for his career, he was 33% for his career, not egregious with Phoenix. 34%, a little bit higher, and he was taking three or four a game for most of that time. 2003, 39%, and that was when he was taking the most he ever took at 4.5 a game. Just shooting is contagious. At the time he was with Dallas, I mean, he was taking half a three a game, 15%, averaging 12 points, but just an incredible defender to the end of his career. And I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. Small forwards, it's really tough for them to get all defensive nods, and I think that kind of hurts their Hall of Fame candidacy, just because, you know, the bigger you are, the better you are at defense, and small forwards are competing with power forwards for spots on the all-defensive team, but whatever. I digress. Third team power forward, I think he should not be on this list, because I think he should have won finals MVP in 2020. Anthony Davis. First team All-NBA that year. He only missed 10 games. That was the most healthy he's been until this year. Since he's like 24 years old, he was 26 years old when he won that title. And he felt like an aged vet, and that also somehow feels forever ago. 26 points a game that season, 9 boards, kind of stopped rebounding when he came with the Lakers, but that's because for those first couple years especially, they surrounded him with a couple big centers, and then the last 2 years-ish, he's become more of a center, kind of to his detriment, but he's kind of figured it out this year. But during that playoff run, 27.7 points per game, 9.7 rebounds, only 1.4 blocks. That was his worst shot blocking playoff run. Of course, when you're playing 21 games versus 4 or 5, those numbers are going to go down. But last year, 3.1 blocks per game. Interesting. Also, more importantly, led the league in blocks during that playoff run, or led the league in points in that playoff run. I think he should have been Finals MVP. His defense was more important than everything LeBron brought. It was, of course, a kind of weird finals because everybody got more rest, and that really helped older dudes like LeBron, but whatever. Third team center. On that same team, the guy being beside Anthony Davis for about half the time, Dwight Howard. It's funny that it finally took playing with a guy like LeBron to figure out what Dwight Howard needed to be to stay in the league. This was the second of three Lakers stops when he played with AD in 2020, which is just really funny. Three separate times he signed with LA. Well, once I guess he was traded, but whatever. That 2009 Orlando team was, of course, his best chance he would have won Finals MVP. I love that team because the way they defended, they didn't care if the main guy went off. Like, LeBron had an incredible series in the conference finals against them when the Magic won. In the regular season, Dwayne Wade had his career high in points, lost the game, because the Magic just... They didn't have a wing defender, okay? They didn't have a guy who could lock down somebody defensively. So they didn't try to. They went man-on-man and usually doubled the second or third best player and dared the best player, LeBron or Dwayne Wade, to score 50. Like, if one guy scores 50, the other guys score 30, guess what? You score 85 points, probably lose. And Dwight Howard anchoring that defense, incredible. I missed Dwight Howard during those days. I loved him until kind of the end of that Magic run. I think a lot of people are on the same page with me. Just funny how a guy can completely shift from being the most popular to the most despised player in the league really, really quickly without becoming a villain like LeBron did. Just funny. So that's our third team. Gary Payton, Manu Ginobili, Sean Marion, Anthony Davis, Dwight Howard. Second team, point guard. So because I said these three guys are three of the four best defensive point guards of all time and they have to have won a title, you can kind of guess who they are. The second team, second best of these three players, I'm going Jason Kidd. Took his team to two straight finals. A little bit dubious in like 2001, 2, 3, just really, really weak East. In 2002, it's like either the Nets led by Jason Kidd, and pretty much that's it, or the young, talent-filled but not very smart Celtics with Antoine Walker and Paul Pierce. One of those two teams making the finals didn't really make a lot of sense, but still give Jason Kidd props for being one of the rare pass-first defensive point guards, not a scoring point guard, to lead a team to back-to-back finals. That's insane. And by the time he came to the Mavericks, like, he was just never a good three-point shooter with the Knicks, and definitely not, or with the Nets, and definitely not with the Suns. But then when he got to the Mavericks, he became like this 40% three-point shooter, hitting five a game, and all of a sudden he's like one of the career, quote-unquote, best three-point shooters of all time, which is just, statistically, it looks like it, but it's just not true. It's just funny how you can change your, same thing with Dwight Howard, the opposite way, you can completely change your narrative. Even so, he was, so that 2011 Dallas Mavericks team, same thing as Sean Marion, like, he wasn't, I don't know, is he the second best player on the team? It doesn't really matter, because it was Dirk Nowitzki, and then six dudes who were immensely important. And Jason Kidd was one of those dudes. This was obviously, he was 37 years old, a little past his prime, still an incredible defender, still getting 8 points, 8 assists a game. Dreadful shooting numbers that year, 36%, but I mean, he's scoring 8 points a game. What do you expect? Second team, shooting guard. Two titles as the third or fourth best player on both teams, Ray Allen. This is kind of fun. Over his first 5 seasons, didn't miss a game. That's pretty good. The way he transformed from each stop, like when he went from, with Milwaukee, he was just this very prototypical shooting guard. really high three-point numbers. But then when he went to Seattle, it became something different. Like, his jumper became just other, like, completely separate from what we've seen in NBA history. And that's kind of how I grew up knowing him, was that Seattle version. And then with Boston, it became just this spot-up guy. And he kind of forgot how to dribble, which is just a funny thing because he just wasn't used in that way anymore, even though he was really controlling the ball with Seattle and Milwaukee. So he just really sacrificed more going to Boston than anybody else did on that team. And then with Miami, he still was useful, playing 25 minutes a game at 38 years old, just hitting threes, hitting the biggest three probably in finals history in 2013. And yet there's just no argument that he could have won finals MVP either time. But like 2008, 15 points a game in the playoffs. 2009, when KG got hurt, 18 a game, but shot 40%. The next year, they made the finals, 16 a game, solid shooting numbers. The next year, 9 games only in 2011, 57% from three during those playoff games. Insane. And then 2013, obviously the shot, the biggest shot anybody's ever made, anybody ever will make. Second team, small forward, Scottie Pippen. They should have just thrown him one, you know? They knew Jordan was going to win a couple more. They should have thrown Scottie one. And I'm trying to figure out which one that would be. Now, for in 91, 92, 93, he averaged about 20 points a game each time, along with like 7 to 9 boards, 6 assists, and just the best defense anybody's ever seen. And then the last three, he was a little past his prime for those final three. So maybe not in there. Jordan's a little past his prime too, of course. That's just kind of how it works age-wise, you know. Let's see, his best finals, just statistically, it's probably the 93 finals. He's also guarding Charles Barkley, the MVP of the league. The argument people make, it's all LeBron, people who say that Jordan carried, or that Pippen carried Jordan, is so funny to me. It's like you're going to overrate this guy just because you don't like the other one. But that being said, Scottie's one of the 8 best small forwards of all time, and one of the most rounded players we've ever seen. Point forward of the 90s and the best defensive small forward. I will take that. They should have given him one, you know, 5-1, Jordan to Pippen. I'd be fine with that. Second team power forward, Kevin McHale. He won 3 titles with Boston, including his rookie year. He's only playing 9 points a game. By 84, he was an all-star. He won 6th man of the year as an all-star in 84. And then 2 years later, he was an MVP semi-candidate, 4th in MVP voting in 87. 26 points, 9 rebounds, 60% shooting. He could guard any size and just was the best. He was the craftiest post offensive player the NBA has ever seen. And we're just not going to see anything like that because players don't play that way anymore. He and the next guy I'm going to talk about benefited from Larry Bird, I think, more than people give him credit for. And I think Larry Bird is the 3rd best player of all time because of that. But that being said, Kevin McHale is no slouch. In the 81 finals, it was Cedric Maxwell, MVP, 84 and 86. It was Bird. I don't think you give either of those two to... I don't think you make the argument for either of those going to Kevin McHale. So, bummer, buddy. Second team center. I have never been a fan. I think he's just good at a lot of things across the board. And then he played with Larry Bird, 3rd best player of all time, and Kevin McHale. Robert Parrish. That being said, when you're pretty good at 20 different things, I think he's the prototypical center. He get you 18 points a game, get you 10 to 11 rebounds, a couple blocks, efficient shooting. You could pass the ball around, not really a creator at all. I think he needs to play with a guy like Magic, Bird, LeBron, Wade, Steve Nash, somebody who makes players better. I think if he was playing with Jordan, I don't know how much we would be thinking of Parrish. He played with Jordan in 1997, actually, and averaged 4 points a game. It's a joke, obviously, because he was 43 freaking years old. But he was also a 3-time title winner with Boston and won one in 97 with the Bulls. So there you go. So that's our second team. Jason Kidd, Ray Allen, Scottie Pippen, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish. Our first team point guard, the best defensive point guard of all time, IMO, Walt Frazier. Now, a lot of these guys from the 70s get a little hyped, a little overhyped, because we see a little bit of them, but not a lot of them. So they become more of a mystique. I think he and Dr. J both benefited from that. But that doesn't mean he's not the best point guard who never won a Finals MVP. Two titles with those storied Knicks teams, 70 and 73. They didn't keep steals until he was 28 years old, 7 years deep in the league. But by the time they started keeping track of steals, he was getting two a game for his entire career. 10 years with the Knicks, 19 points, 6 assists every single game. 72 is his best year, 11th in MVP voting, 23 points a game. He was up to 6th in MVP voting in 74, but the league just got weaker, you know. Both playoffs, Willis Reed won. I think 73 should have gone to Frazier, having not been there and watching a few of the games on, like, you know, 50 years later, but whatever. 22 points, 6 assists. Reed, who just died about a year ago now, actually. Thought it was way closer than that. In those 73 playoffs, 13 points, 8 rebounds a game. He was just, you know, kind of edging past his prime. Still, you know, probably the best post defender on that team. But they have the here comes Willis when he dragged his dead leg up the court to finish the game. So the narrative-wise, you know, cool, but Frazier was better in those playoffs, and he deserved MVP. First team shooting guard, Clyde Drexler. Couldn't win it as best player on his team. Fine, most players can't, but he could win it as the second best player on his team. In 95, I don't think those Houston Rockets have the major turnaround, and they won as a 5 seed, barely making it to the 5 seed in the first place, and then ended up winning the finals. Incredible. I don't think they do that if they don't make a midseason trade for a 32-year-old Clyde Drexler. It's so funny because in 92, there was a semi-argument that he was best player in the league. 25 points, you know, 25, 7, and 7, good shooting numbers. Second in MVP voting behind Michael Jordan. Took his team to the finals and then just got dismantled. And then on the Dream Team, Jordan just broke his brain. There was the two left shoes story, where Clyde accidentally wore two left shoes but didn't want to say anything because he knew Michael Jordan make fun of him. And then he found out and he did. but then after that season, the next 2 years, so Clyde was at 25 in 92. The next 2 years after getting his brain broken by Jordan, 19 points, 19 points. The third season after that is when he got traded midseason and kind of picked his stock back up, became a better defender because he was less of an offensive burden, way more efficient, 50% shooting in those 35 games in the second half of the season. 21 points, 7 boards, good passer. Wasn't going to win Finals MVP over Hakeem during his peak, but the team just doesn't win if they don't make that trade. So there you go. Clyde, one of the many guys who people pretended was a 1 when he's really a 2. And that's fine. Most guys are like that. Honestly, everybody on this list is like that. Other than our first team small forward. Literally everybody other than our first team small forward. Julius Erving, Dr. J. And that's only because kind of a circumstance. His peak was in the ABA where he won 2 titles with the Virginia, or I guess both of his titles were with the New York Nets. But with Philly, when he came to the NBA, he was 26 years old on a lot of bad teams. He's playing with a guy who wanted to shoot too much, and it hurt his stats because the other guy shoot too much. And Dr. Dave just, you know, he's not going to fight for shots. He's at like 21, 23 points a game in his first couple seasons. They traded away George McGinnis, and boom, 27 points a game. It helps when you have a great defensive player beside you instead of George McGinnis, who jacks up bad shots and tries to pretend as a Hall of Famer, but whatever. 81 MVP. I think that MVP is a little dubious, but it's a, you know, give it to the guy who's a legend already at 30 years old. In 1983, they traded for Moses Malone to pair the last two MVP winners together. That's crazy. So in 1993, Moses Malone was in his peak. Julius Erving was not. They won the finals. Moses Malone won MVP. Moses Malone won Finals MVP. It's the way she goes. It's fine. Dr. J is one of the most underrated defensive players of all time. Just statistically, basically a 2-block, 2-steal guy every game, and hardened defense. Didn't really stretch the floor. Nobody really did back then. But the way he attacked the basket is still something that gets you feeling some type of way watching highlights. Not a lot of guys like that even now. I don't think anybody's ever going to really match that, just because too many guys are taking threes nowadays. I sound like an old man right now, so let's move on to power forward, first team power forward, Kevin Garnett. 12 years in Minnesota. First year he leaves, wins a title. Bada bing, bada boom. KG is a secondary offensive player. On that 2006 team, he transformed the entire Celtics because of his mentality. He was a bona fide killer, and that made Paul Pierce better, because Paul Pierce was a little... there's just, in the early 2000s, there's a lot of people who didn't like Paul Pierce for his effort, for his attitude. And Kevin Garnett was, you know, A-plus in both of those two. But he... Like, I don't trust Kevin Garnett to finish a game offensively. And that's fine. A lot of people can't. And he does 20 other things to make his team better. So Paul Pierce ended up winning the finals MVP, even though he scored fewer points than KG in the playoffs. Even though he did one thing, whereas KG did 12 rebounding defense. He's a better passer than Paul Pierce, honestly. But Paul Pierce was a scorer, and he scored his way to the finals MVP. I think that's fair. It's just different roles, you know? It's the same reason Chauncey won finals MVP in 2004 instead of Ben Wallace. So for that reason, Kevin Garnett is probably the best player to have never won finals MVP. He's a secondary offensive player and a emotional alpha on a team. The guy who is not an emotional alpha on a team, but definitely a secondary player, David Robinson. Now, throughout the 90s, he's putting up fantasy galore stats. Like, almost 30 points a game in 94. 11 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 blocks, a steal and a half. Led the league in rebounding, blocks, and points in 3 separate seasons. MVP in 95 when he did neither of those 3 things. From 1990 until 1996, listen to these where he finished in MVP ranking. 6th, 3rd, 3rd, 6th, 2nd, 1st, 2nd. Insane. Played 6 games in 97. He was on the other side of 30 at this point, because the Spurs wanted to draft Tim Duncan. I mean, who wouldn't? And then in 98, he paired with a better player, rookie Tim Duncan, who was first team All-NBA's rookie when David Robinson was second team. Just immediately, they realized he was a secondary player when Tim Duncan stepped on the court. And in 99, dropped to 16 points a game, 10 rebounds. Tim Duncan, first team All-NBA, won finals MVP. It just goes back to knowing your role. David Robinson can do everything on the court. He played a lot like Joel Embiid, just without the three-point shooting. Incredible ball handler, great rebounder, great shot blocker. Very intelligent guy. I wonder if that hurt him sometimes, because he was very hesitant in big moments. A lot of those big guys, Wilt Chamberlain, Elvin Hayes, Patrick Ewing, David Robinson, Kevin Garnett, Joel Embiid. A lot of big guys just settle for fadeaway. Karl Malone, big time. A lot of them settle for fadeaway mid-range shots instead of attacking the basket when the going gets tough. And I think that's because they're afraid to... I don't want to psychoanalyze people. But there are just a lot of lack of clutch big guys throughout history. And there's always kind of one for an era. But he's still one of the 30 best players of all time. Most players are incapable of being the best player on a finals team. Dave Robinson was one of them. You know, life goes on. That's our list. Let's go back through it. First team, point guard, Walt Frazier, Clyde Drexler, Julius Erving, Kevin Garnett, David Robinson. Second team, Jason Kidd, Ray Allen, Scottie Pippen, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish. Third team, Gary Payton, Manu Ginobili, Sean Marion, Anthony Davis, and Dwight Howard. Apologies to Pau Gasol. I could have stuck him in over Anthony Davis. I think he also definitely could have won finals MVP in 2010. Just an insanely efficient series. Kind of led the offense when it got broken on occasion, and reeled Kobe back in a way I think Kobe really needed. Great defense, great rebounding. I wouldn't have been mad if you give it to Pau Gasol there. I think in the NBA, too often, it just goes to the best player on the team. In the NFL, it's not as given that just the best player automatically gets it. It's, you know, usually the quarterback. But if the quarterback has a mediocre game and somebody else shines, they give it to them. In the NBA, the best player has to have like a bad series. So congrats to Steph Curry for getting off this list. 2015, he really should have won. It was really odd. It was really NFL-ish that Andre Iguodala won in 2015. And the same thing happened the year before with Kawhi Leonard, but it made more sense that year. So I'm wondering if they thought there was a precedent being set, so they just kind of changed it. Always interesting to me. Apologies to Ben Wallace. Wanted to put you over Dwight Howard. I like you better than Dwight Howard. I'm wondering if I should have put Ben Wallace over Dwight Howard. His peak was too short. Dwight had a pretty short peak, but the rest of his career was pretty good, whereas the rest of Ben Wallace's post-peak career sucked. Elvin Hayes barely missed the cut. Draymond and Clay, I think I could have put Clay over Manu Ginobili. I thought about putting Draymond as a small forward over Sean Marion, but that seemed dishonest, so I didn't do that. Chris Bosh could have made the list. Kyrie, maybe. And again, just looking through all these guys, the 15 guys that I named on the first, second, third team, really only Julius Irving is the only one where it's like, oh yeah, okay, you were the best player, you were capable of being the best player on a championship team. The rest of these guys are secondary players. So it's funny to me how that worked out. I'm wondering if you guys thought the same thing. If you hate my wrong opinions, tweet me at WrongOpinionNBA. We are going to be back next week talking about the best players who never won Rookie of the Year. The best players, the best rookie seasons that didn't win Rookie of the Year. Until then, peace out.